The next case is Novell versus Microsoft. Mr. Cooper, when you're ready.
Good morning, Judge Shedd, Judge Duncan, and Judge Hamilton, and may it please the court. I'm Charles Cooper for the appellant Novell. In the asset purchase agreement at issue in this case, Novell transferred and sold to Caldera its DOS business. Now, that was a defined term in the APA, and it was defined as the DOS products, the DOS products. And the DOS products was also a defined term.
It included a specific list of 13 products.
Yes, Your Honor, 13 products, all operating in the operating system market. Now, the APA also transferred specifically to Caldera those things that are associated naturally with the DOS products.
You added the word naturally in there.
Well, associated with the DOS products, the copyrights, the trademarks, the revenue, obviously.
That's the issue. That's the issue, and it looks to me like the case turns on that associated directly or indirectly with.
It
do
does.
You agree? You agree that's the language.
That is the language. The language with respect to the assignment
right.
of claims or causes of action associated directly or indirectly with the DOS product.
That's the operative language for what was assigned, correct? Here,
yep.
That's an issue here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have to decide whether or not the issue at play was transferred by that language.
Whether the claims at right. issue in count one, the claim at issue in count right. one, was transferred and assigned to Caldera by that language.
And how indirect is indirect? I mean, what are the parameters of indirect?
Well, Your Honor, our submission is that direct or indirect is with respect to injury to the DOS products. It is directly or indirectly injured to the DOS products. There's no doubt.
So it's cabined by the DOS products, is that your argument?
Yes,
the indirect reference is cabined by...
By the DOS products themselves. When you normally think of a claim associated with a product, you think of a claim for injury to that product. If to the extent that it is indirectly associated with that product, our submission is that this language is readily amenable and much more amenable than the theory that Microsoft offers to the proposition that injury to the other things transferred along with the DOS business, the trademarks, the intellectual property, the copyrights, things of this nature.
But in the first instance, what you intended to do, we don't really know that. Don't we first look at the language itself to see what in the language itself would cabin or limit that associated directly or indirectly? Isn't that what we first have to do and decide if we know by looking at that language, if it's clear to us, then that's the end of it. If it's not clear, then we have to move beyond that.
Well, Your Honor, actually, under Utah law, you look at extrinsic evidence in order to determine whether or not the language is ambiguous. The Danes case on this issue, I think, is quite clear with the process that court, and I think this court, therefore, must apply, which is that you open your eyes to extrinsic evidence to determine, okay.
What if the extrinsic evidence is itself ambiguous? What does that do?
Well,
If it were to be,
the Danes case suggests that you look at, you then determine, well, what does this language mean in light of that extrinsic evidence, even if it's ambiguous? And does the language, in light of that extrinsic evidence, bear both interpretations?
That'd be a factual question then.
It would be a factual question, Your Honor. If it does indeed, if it is amenable to both interpretations, then it can't be decided as a matter of law. And this issue here, Your Honor, was decided as a matter of law, that as a matter of law, this formulation not only unambiguously transfers all claims for injury to the DOS products, but that it also unambiguously assigns some claims for injury to products that had nothing to do with this deal, products that were not transferred and were not assigned. The business applications, WordPerfect, GroupWise, QuattroPro, and the others. So the question is, does this language unambiguously, as a matter of law, transfer claims, some of the claims relating to injury to those products?
What does the language directly or indirectly add or not add to this? It looks to me like associated directly or indirectly with seems on its face at first glance pretty broad. But then does directly or indirectly just mean we really mean anything and everything you can think of? Or does it, what does it mean to you?
Your Honor,
what do you suggest it should mean to us, I guess?
We suggest it should mean to you associated in an unqualified way. In other words, the other places in this very agreement where the word associated appears, revenues associated with the DOS business, products associated with the DOS business, the other places where associated appears, it's not qualified, and presumably it means associated directly or indirectly.
That's what it seems to me, that if you were to admit the issue here is indirect, even if the words weren't in that provision, if there were an admission that this was an indirect association, the other side would claim that's an association, whether you have the word directly or indirectly in this contract at all. If they're an indirect association, it's still an association.
It just makes clear that the association isn't qualified to some type of direct association, Your Honor. Yes, it's just associated.
It doesn't
add anything to the unqualified, naked use of the word associated, which appears elsewhere in the document.
I know that it does. So you think that your argument then must turn on what we see associated to mean?
Yes, Your Honor.
And
that's what Judge Motz thought. He didn't attach particular significance to the presence of the word indirectly there, certainly not the way Microsoft does. He just said, look, there's an association here. And what was that association? It was that, well, in count one, we're alleging destruction of the business applications, WordPerfect and the others, by Microsoft for the purpose of monopolizing the operating system market. What does that have to do with this? Well, with the business applications. Then he says, well, the DOS products, DR-DOS and the other operating systems, they competed in the operating system market. Ergo, there's the association. But, Your Honor, at the same breath, both Microsoft and Judge Motz agree that the claims in count 2 through 5 were clearly not transferred. And the only difference between those counts and count 1 is what Microsoft's motivation was for its anti-competitive activity. Now,
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
I know you want to make an argument, but I want you to answer the question so I can understand for myself what
Certainly.
I need to do here.
Sure.
Do you think we need to know as a court, we need to determine what the word associated means so that then we will know if an application, whether or not the contract is ambiguous or the extent of that word, so we'll know whether or not a specific application is covered? Or do you think, as the other side argues, we don't care about what all applications are, we just care about what the application is in this specific case?
Your Honor, I would submit it's plainly the former. This language isn't limited to, for example, antitrust claims.
I'm inclined to agree with you. Now, that being the case, how would I determine what associated means? Because associated, it means a lot of things, and it's awful for, associated could be it happened to be marketed next to in some brochure by a third party. That would be associated with it.
Well, Your Honor, you have just basically said at least that term is ambiguous. It could mean. It could mean presumably what I say it means and what Microsoft
no,
says
I don't know that. I don't know that that's an argument necessarily that it's ambiguous. That may be an argument that's just as about as far-reaching a word as you can use in a contract.
Well, Your Honor,
are we going to be able to get beyond the APA at all? Because I do have some questions. I mean, I know this is an important issue, but I'm just sort of flagging the need to ask a few other about a few other things.
Well, before we do leave the APA, let me just say this: I would submit to you that the first level of trying to determine, the court trying to determine, what does the word associated mean, is to ask, is it plausible? Is it plausible that the parties to the APA allocated the claims with respect to the business applications, the products that had nothing to do with the APA and that Novell wasn't selling, whether allocating claims with respect associated with the business applications makes any sense to say, yes, Caldera gets the ones that if Microsoft's purpose was for monopolizing the operating system, but we keep them if Microsoft's purpose was to monopolize the business application market. That makes no sense. It's not plausible. And so that's what the deal is that this interpretation has imposed on the parties to the APA. Then ask yourself, okay, does the word associated lend itself to any other interpretation, one that is more plausible? And, Your Honor, then it seems to me you do have to look at the extrinsic evidence, which is 100% my way. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. I think I understand your argument on the APA, but there's some other questions that I have. Assume for a moment that we disagree with you on assignment. Assume for purposes of my question. You do not directly raise your claims with respect to count 6 in your opening brief. That is correct. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. We have...
So those are not before us?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Assume for purposes of my question that you were to prevail on a trial on the merits as to count 1. What would your damages include? Is my question clear?
I think your
what
question is clear.
Like?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, honestly, that I'm equipped to answer it with precision.
What I'm trying to get to is what it would help me visualize what that language means.
Yes. Your Honor, if we were to win on count 6, our damages
would... Well, count 6, you just told me this before. It should be count 1.
Forgive me. I meant count 1. I beg your pardon. Our damages and the damages that are alleged in the complaint are the damages to the business applications, the harm and the injury to the business applications, WordPerfect, GroupWise, and the others, from the anti-competitive conduct that Microsoft intended to...
your argument would be to damage as a gateway.
To keep the application's barrier to entry to the operating system high and that moat wide, something this court is very familiar with from our last visit.
And one more. If we agree with you, assume for purposes of my question, that the district court erred with respect to the assignment analysis, what sorts of material issues of disputed fact remain? You point out that the judgment was made the issue was decided as a matter of law.
Yes.
So what are the issues of disputed issues of material fact?
With respect to the assignment issue, Your Honor, we would say that summary judgment should have been entered for us on the interpretation of
it. So you don't think there are disputed issues. You think that it was appropriate to decide the question as a matter of law. The district court just decided it the wrong way as a matter of law.
I do believe, Your Honor, yes, that if you conclude that the word associated is not as a matter of law amenable to only Microsoft's interpretation of it, if you conclude that, then you have to look at the extrinsic evidence. And you can't look at that, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit, and not give me summary judgment. But the worst thing that can happen to me from this visit to this court is for the court to at least say, well, in the first time Judge Motz looked at this, he said it can only go my way. And this court did not accept interlocutory review of that at that time. And the second time he said it can only go Microsoft's way. So at a minimum, it's ambiguous, and we get to go to trial on what it means. We get to have a jury decide what it means if the judges can't decide as a matter of law. So, yes,
so there are disputed issues of material fact. There must be.
Well, I'm saying I don't think there are. But
there might be some somewhere.
I don't think there's...
In your argument that is you win, you should win as a matter of law, but if you don't win as a matter of law, court, I at least get to go back and argue to a jury.
I at least get to go to a jury and say, 12 good men and women and true, surely you agree with me that the word associate here doesn't include some of my claims to products I didn't even transfer and had nothing to do.
Let me ask you this on my time. What was the effect of the suit that Caldera brought against Microsoft in which your client shared in the recovery? What was the effect of that suit on these claims you now are asserting?
Judge Hamilton, we submit to you there was no effect at all.
Tell me, why not?
I will, Your Honor. I think that if I am right and Novell didn't assign these claims to Caldera, Caldera couldn't have asserted the claims. Caldera certainly isn't.
All right, I understand that argument. I don't want to cut you off. But if you are correct, then why isn't Caldera feuding with your client as to who owns the claims?
Because, Your Honor, and this is what the extrinsic evidence is so clear on, both parties, both negotiators to the APA, Caldera's guy and my guy, Novell's guy, agreed that the business applications weren't part of the deal, and claims for injury to the business applications obviously also weren't part of the deal. So, Your Honor, there's no dispute. Caldera doesn't agree with Microsoft and think, oh yeah, we got those claims so long as the theory of the claim was monopolizing the operating system market. So, Your Honor, the parties to the agreement are in accord on that. And if the court permits, I would reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
You've reserved it. Thank you very much. Mr. Tolchin, when you're ready, sir.
May it please the court, good morning. David Tolchin for Appellee Microsoft Corporation. There were at least two reasons why count one is barred in this instance. The first, of course, is that the claim was assigned. The second is the equally important principle of res judicata. Let me take them in order, if I may. The key flaw in what Mr. Cooper argues is an interpretation of the contract which would have it read claims associated with harm to D.R. Das.
No, I don't think that's correct. Let me tell you the problem that I'm having, and maybe if you could respond to that, that would really
be
most
to.
Helpful. The APA addresses the Das products. It applies to the Das products. It lists associated directly or indirectly with any of the Das products or related technology. And it then goes on. We define DOS products, and it includes a list, a specific list of 13 products. So the APA assigns the DOS products.
It does more than that, Your Honor.
If I could. You're saying, and I understand your argument, that anything directly or indirectly related to those DOS products also got assigned. The specific difficulty that I'm having is that there is no logical limiting principle there, because everything in a computer is related to the operating system. The mouse is related to the operating system. What would not be included if you went beyond the operating system to the software applications?
No, the contract is not written that broadly, Judge Duncan, with all respect. And if I may, I think it's important to concentrate on the language, which says any and all claims or causes of action held by Novell and associated directly or indirectly
with any of the DOS products,
including DR-DOS. Now, the one thing that I think we can all agree on is that in an antitrust case, there is nothing more fundamental than the market. And in fact, Your Honor, when this court, Your Honor, wrote the opinion, Judge Duncan, in 2007, dealt with issues in this case, you very specifically said that count one was predicated on monopolization of the operating system market. Novell emphasized at every turn last time here, in order to escape the bar of the statute of limitations, that count one was a claim for Microsoft's conduct in the PC operating systems market. And Your Honor said that at 505 F3rd at page 307.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
But what does the language that you ask about and the cabining principle about associated, why does that have to be predicated on antitrust law at all?
It doesn't, but the assignment here is not of products. It's of causes of action.
That's correct.
Associated with product.
That's correct. Could there be an association of an unfair trade practice claim?
Perhaps, Your Honor.
Okay.
Personal injury claim if the operating system explodes? Or the software, or if a software application causes the system to crash?
Well, that would be a claim the other way around. Caldera would be asserting Novell's claims for injury. Here, though, what we do know is that the claim was for conduct in the operating system market. This court said that at every turn in 2007.
But we weren't interpreting the specific language of this agreement.
Well, Your Honor, all you have to do...
In the antitrust case, we were focusing on the argument that Microsoft was attempting to maintain its monopoly in the operating systems market by targeting specific business applications, a separate market, because of their platform ability.
But, Your Honor, that's what this claim is. At Joint Appendix page 100, count one of Novell's complaint, the only count still alive, Mr. Cooper's acknowledged that count six is now out as well. Count one is entitled, Your Honor, quote, monopolization of the Intel-compatible operating systems market, unquote. This is a claim for conduct in the operating systems market. It's an unusual claim because they then go on to say that conduct in the operating system market damaged WordPerfect and Quattro Pro, the business applications. But if it's conduct in that market and the contract assigned all causes of action for operating systems business, the operating systems business, DR-DOS, causes of action associated with an operating system.
Why is that necessarily so? Could you not have, in a hypothetical situation, a monopolizer take action against another competitor to damage both the operating system and also to damage applications for use in that operating system? Why couldn't that be, either one of those be a claim?
Well, that wouldn't be an antitrust claim, the second part of it. I mean, this claim here is...
But why does that matter? For purposes of interpreting this agreement?
It does not matter, Your Honor. But if I may, the word associated is as far-reaching a word as can be used when you talk about a transfer.
So there's no limitation on associated?
No, No, it's, of course, there's some limitation.
What are they?
I know this, Your Honor, that a cause of action for monopolizing the market in which DR-DOS competes.
Is there a type of computer hardware or software which would not be indirectly associated?
Yes, any other type. What we're talking about here, Judge Duncan, is monopolization of that very market, the market in which DR-DOS competed and competes. Now, res judicata is a very close...
Stop right there. That last statement you made, how is that limited by the word associated? The word associated, is associated limited to the argument, the statement you just made, by the word itself?
I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor, but...
You just said we're dealing only with claims in the operating market.
Correct.
Does the word associated carry that?
No, I think it's broader than that. It certainly encompasses, it covers operating system market claims.
All right, let me go back and ask you. You said it's far-ranging, and I asked you what is a limitation that's inherent in the word associated itself, and I thought you were getting ready to tell me you don't know what the answer to that is, but you know it covers this issue. But
correct.
That's not my question. I'm asking what is the limitation of the word associated?
Well, it certainly wouldn't cover... harm, an antitrust claim, for instance, for harm in other markets. Counts 2 to 5 in this complaint.
Based on the word associated, why is that necessarily true?
Because there we're talking about monopolization of the business applications market.
Why does that matter for purposes of this agreement, I think, is the problem that I am also having.
Because the language here focuses on causes of action. Not
right,
harm to products.
But that's not a limiting principle because you can have a cause of action in a different market. And you said anything else. Specifically,
clearly,
you succinctly give me parameters? What does limit this language? And what is on either side of the limitation as opposed to as between software applications and anything else?
Well, it clearly wouldn't cover causes of action that are associated in such a far-reaching way that it would be illogical to connect them to DR-DOS.
But
a claim for monopolization of the market in which that product operated, that is directly associated, certainly indirectly. And if I may...
So it covers any market in which DOS operates?
It only competed in one market. Everyone acknowledges that, the Intel-compatible PC operating systems market, the market that is the subject of Count 1. And again, Count 1 says it's Microsoft's conduct in that market that caused the injury to Novell. So we're dealing with something that's at the very heart of what was transferred. By the way, the extrinsic evidence merely says, on the part of the three affiants...
Let's stop for 1 second. Do you agree that under Utah law, we look at that extrinsic evidence to decide whether or not there is some question of ambiguity or what this language means in the first instance?
There is case law to that effect. Okay. The most recent decision of the Supreme Court of Utah, Your Honor, is Cafe Rio against Larkin Gifford. 207 Pacific 3rd, 1235 at 1240, the most recent decision on this point. And the Supreme Court of Utah there says, where the language within the four corners of the contract is unambiguous, the party's intentions are determined from the plain meaning of the contractual language, and the contract may be interpreted as a matter of law.
So your answer is we don't look at that extrinsic evidence first?
That's Cafe Rio. Correct, Your Honor. The court goes on to say, only if the language of the contract is ambiguous will we consider extrinsic evidence of the party's intent. I think we come out the same place, Your Honor, either way. The affiants don't say that claims for monopolization of the operating system market weren't transferred. They clearly were. And that's what count one is. They say neither party contemplated that such a claim would include Novell's claim for harm to Quattro Pro and WordPerfect. Well, of course not. That's an unconventional claim, to say the least. And if I can make the point about res judicata, Your Honors, I think this is an equally important point. Judge Motz dealt with it at footnote 9 of his opinion, and he misunderstood the claim. He said that if the claim wasn't sold, then there's no res judicata claim, which is incorrect. I know analogies are imperfect, but if you sold a claim for all causes of action associated with an automobile accident on July 23rd, and the plaintiff who purchased the claim from you then sued for harm to the vehicle and injury to the left elbow of the driver, clearly a judgment in that case would be res judicata with respect to a second claim for damage to the right ankle caused by negligent operation of the vehicle that struck the plaintiff's car.
Let me ask you a question. In your brief, footnote 5 on page 44, you assert that moreover, in the absence of any objective corroboration that Novell and Caldera intended to assign only claims for harm to the DOS products, Novell's self-serving affidavits are not sufficient to create a genuine issue of material fact regarding the correct interpretation of the APA. Do I take that to mean you think that in the face of an affidavit alone is not enough to create a question of fact in this case if we were to get to that extrinsic evidence? Do you think the law requires additional objective corroboration to create a question of fact?
No, let me put it this way, Your Honor. I'm not sure I understood exactly, but
I'm going to make it clear to you. Do you think in this case objective corroboration of a proper affidavit would be necessary to create a question of fact that's created by that affidavit?
No.
Okay.
No, the affidavits here don't create an issue of fact.
No, but I just ask about an affidavit. If we were to say that an affidavit does, I don't understand the purpose of that footnote then if you don't believe that.
I think the point, and maybe it wasn't stated well, Your Honor, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the point was that the three affidavits in question merely say that Novell didn't discuss with Caldera or contemplate a sale of claims regarding its business applications. There is never any affiant who says Novell did not sell all its claims for monopolization of the operating system market. That's what it did sell. That's what's so clear. It sold its claims. And the court will remember, I think, from our brief, that before Caldera sued, using Novell's outside lawyers, draft complaints were prepared. Memoranda were written. We refer to these in our brief. And everyone understood that Caldera's claim would be for unlawful monopolization of the operating system market by Microsoft. And the harm inflicted as a result of that unlawful conduct under 15 U.S.C. Section 2, that claim was adjudicated. Caldera made a hefty settlement. Novell benefited to the tune of $53 million. That claim is the same claim, now split for harm to business applications, whereas before the original claim was only for harm to operating systems.
I'm looking at the affidavit of Mr. Graff, just a factual question. He says, this is Joint Appendix, page 5024, paragraph 3. Any suggestion that the asset purchase agreement conveyed claims for harm to Novell's application would be contrary to the party's intention and what I and my client Caldera understood was actually being conveyed to it. Why is that dismissed?
All he's saying is that we didn't intend to sell claims for harm to business applications. That's not the APA. The APA doesn't refer to claims for harm to DRDOS, its causes of actions associated with it. What he does not say, Judge Shedd, and this is what's so revealing,
Well, he does say neither party contemplated that, neither party's contemplated that claims directly or indirectly related to the DOS products or related technology would include Novell's antitrust claims for harm to its business applications. He says that.
Correct. What he doesn't say is that, and everyone acknowledges this, what was being assigned to Caldera were claims for monopolization of the operating system market. Now, the Fourth Circuit, this court, in Pushell against the United States, it's 369 F3rd 345 at page 355, 2004. Judge Shedd, you were on this panel, says, were we to focus on the claims asserted in each suit, we would allow parties to frustrate the goals of res judicata through artful pleading and claim splitting. Given that a single cause of action here, monopolization of the operating system, can manifest itself into an outpouring of different claims. That's the key point for res judicata and also for the first question of interpretation of the APA. A single cause of action for monopolization of the operating system market was sold and brought by Caldera. Novell received $53 million as its share of that. And the very point of the principle of claim splitting is that, I'm quoting Judge Niemeyer from the Pittston case, which we cite in our brief, 199 F3rd, this is at 709 to 710. Res judicata requires a plaintiff to advance in a single action all of the legal theories and demands for relief arising out of the same cause of action. So let me back up. I have just a minute left. If it's correct that Novell sold all its claims, its causes of action for monopolization of the operating system market, and I know I've had trouble delimiting the range of the word associated because it is so broad, but there's no dispute that that's what was sold in 1996, claims for monopolization of the operating system market, the market in which DRDOS competed. If Novell sold that, and everyone agrees that it did, then it is clearly a violation of the claim splitting rule to have one suit by Caldera for harm to operating systems and a second by Novell for harm to business applications flowing from the same violation as it's described in count one, Microsoft's unlawful monopolization of the very market in which DRDOS competed. Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cooper.
Counsel for Microsoft insisted time and again that everyone agrees that Novell sold all claims for monopolization of the operating system market. I don't see that in the APA, and certainly Novell doesn't agree with that. And for that matter, neither does Caldera.
What claim was not assigned? What claim was not assigned?
We did not assign any claim for injury to the business applications. Just as Mr. Graff said in the quotation that the court invoked previously in your colloquy, and as every one of the witnesses involved in this transaction have confirmed, they have denied unequivocally exactly what Mr. Tolchin has asserted here. And the APA doesn't say that either. It doesn't use the words market for the operating system.
In your complaint, you talk about word perfect and quattro pro a great deal.
Yes.
Don't you repeatedly?
Yes.
You never once that I could find mentioned group wise.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do want to speak to that. We don't mention group wise. That's true. But we do take a look at paragraph two. It's the paragraph actually that Judge Motz seized upon, and it does mention both word perfect and group wise, and then says and other office productivity applications. So it can't be that our complaint was limited to those two, even though we didn't mention.
You said it mentions group-wise. You don't mean that. You mean quattro, don't you?
Thank you, Your Honor. That's, of course, what I mean. And throughout the complaint, that is the formulation used. WordPerfect and other office productivity applications. Now, here's the thing I want to stress most, however. They say they had no notice. We argue that that was notice. The complaint itself provides not great notice. I wish I could write this complaint over again, Your Honor, take this issue off the table, but it gave them notice, and there was never any doubt. The very first discovery that they defined.
Could I just refer you to paragraph 24, in which I believe you define office productivity applications as including word processing and spreadsheet applications?
We do, Your Honor, yes.
And what notice would that have given to Microsoft?
I don't think that negates the point I just made, because it doesn't limit office productivity applications to those two. It does say they were office productivity applications.
Well, certainly, by so defining office productivity applications, you certainly suggest that that is the universe in which you have an interest.
It includes them, yes, Your Honor. But it doesn't define and delimit them, I would submit to you. But here's my real point. They weren't fooled. Their discovery from the beginning was conducted as if group-wise had been written all over this complaint, as if it had. And so where is the prejudice?
Would that not be the prudent thing to do?
Well, Your Honor, it would certainly be the prudent thing to do if you thought the complaint suggested that, yes, we may be seeking damages for injury to group-wise. If it were true that there was no damage and we weren't seeking anything with respect to any office productivity application except for WordPerfect and Quattro Pro, then I don't see why you'd spend a whole lot of time, and there was a lot of discovery skirmishing over group-wise issues. They had notice, and the way they conducted the litigation proves they had notice. Where's the harm? They've never suggested one thing that they would have done differently if only we had listed group-wise in our complaint, not one thing. And notice pleading just doesn't entitle them to this understanding of our complaint.
What's the status of Utah law on looking at those extrinsic documents?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Rio Cafe. Cafe Rio is not the last word on this. To the contrary, City of Grantsville against Redevelopment Agency of Tool City at 233 Pacific 3rd, 461, and particularly at pages 470 and 71, specifically reaffirm and redescribe the Danes construct. And here's what they say. On remand, the district court's ambiguity analysis should include two steps. First, the district court should consider any relevant and credible extrinsic evidence offered to demonstrate that there is, in fact, an ambiguity in the terms of the agreement. And second, after reviewing the evidence offered, the court may then make a finding that the agreement is ambiguous only if the competing interpretations offered by the parties are reasonably supported by the language of the agreement. So our extrinsic evidence you can look at to decide if associated bears the interpretation that I'm offering it to you for.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll step down to Greek Council and go to the next case.